All right, Jabo said, let us begin today's daf. So first of all, to thank our Talmud Torah sponsor for the month of Adar, on this last day of Adar, the Lerner Mishpacha, for dedicating all of the Shiurim and Drashos this month in memory of Mrs. Dina Lerner Gerber, and in the merit of her Aliyas Neshama. To thank our sponsors for a week of learning, Jack Bennett, for dedicating learning in memory of Captain Dura Barshai, who served and died as deputy commander in the 51st Battalion of the Golani Brigade. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah. And to thank Mordechai Malki Tusk for dedicating the learning this week in honor of Brina's marriage to Aryeh Nirenberg that occurred just yesterday. Baruch Hashem, Mazel Tov to the Chasan and Kala. In the merit of our learning, may they be showered with the Sheva Brachos and beautiful Brachos and may the Esrim Shalim Tovos. Mazel Tov to the Tusk Mishpacha. All right, well, so with that, let us begin. So we do have a lot to do today. Today's daf is Yotes 19. As you know, we are picking up from Yud Ches Amud Beis 18b. So if you remember again, we are picking up Vahashta de Amar Mar. So pretty much it's like in the middle of the page. Pretty much in the middle of 18b. So the Gemara says as follows. Vahashta, so remember, yesterday we got into some very interesting concepts regarding Shem Yechata, a concern that you may come to go ahead and adjust the heat source on Shabbos. So we'll say, we're going to see this, Emirat Hashem, a bit later on, when we come to the halachos of Bishul, when it comes to the halachos of eating. So we're going to see this, or I was just saying, not eating, the halachos of cooking, or the prohibition of cooking on Shabbos. So we'll discuss that part of the concern of maintaining food on a flame on Shabbos is a concern of Shem Yechata, a concern that a person may go ahead and come to adjust the flame, which of course is a problem of Havara, of kindling, and also could be potentially a problem of Bishul, of cooking. So the Gemara says, this is not that sugya. We'll deal with Bishul by itself a little bit later on. So the Gemara says, the hashtag the Amar Mar, now that we spoke about this idea that there's a concern that you may come to adjust the heat source, you are permitted to go ahead and put a pot of raw food into the oven on Erev Shabbos. My time, well, what's the reason for that? So just bear this in mind, because later on when we get to the Bishul Sugyas, this actually is exceptionally important. So for example, we'll see later on that halacha lamaisa, in order to maintain food on a fire going into Shabbos, the food has to be somewhat cooked in order to obviate any concerns that one may come to adjust the heat source to accelerate the cooking process. Interestingly enough, what we'll see is that halacha lamaisa, the food must be either a certain amount cooked or totally raw, which is fascinating, right? But what's the idea of totally raw? This is the concept of kedera chaisa, a raw pot of food. Because when something is raw, the assumption is you're not eating it Friday night. If you're not eating it Friday night, then there's not going to be a concern that one may come to go ahead and manipulate the heat source in order to accelerate cooking. So therefore, the Gemara says, you see from here, so we'll say, it's like I said, we'll see this sugya later on, but you see from here that you could put a pot of raw food into the oven before Shabbos, and there is no concern that one may come to adjust the flame. So the Gemara says, Ubashil Shabbos Dam. Similarly, if something is fully cooked at the onset of Shabbos, there's also no concern that you may come to manipulate the flame. Bashil velo bashil. What happens if something is partially cooked? Asir. Then ultimately, again, it will be prohibited to put it in the oven on Erev Shabbos, lest you come to manipulate the heat source. So we'll say, so you begin to see over here, we'll get into a whole discussion regarding a blech, right? A blech effectively covers the heat source. We'll see all of these sugyas later on. And here, Bosei Begimar brings down an incredible kula that it comes by Hilchos Bishul, which is if you throw in a raw piece of meat into that pot of food, that one raw piece of meat converts the entire pot into a pot of raw food, and therefore allows you to put it into the oven even right before Shabbos. So the Gemara goes right to Bahasha, the Amar Mar, Kol Midi Dikasha Lezekah Lo Magluve. And we'll say, now that we said, based on yesterday's daf, that in general, if something is in the oven on Shabbos, so halacha lemaisa, if opening the oven will allow a draft in, and the draft will ultimately be detrimental to the item that's in the oven, we are not concerned that you will come to go ahead and open up the oven. Hay bisra de gadja visharik shapir dami. If you have the meat of a gdi, right, of a gdi, of a kid, of a lamb, so we'll say that's very tender meat. And ultimately, again, apparently, if you're cooking it in the oven and you then go ahead and open the oven, it's actually detrimental to the meat. So therefore, when it comes to this lamb meat that is being cooked in the oven, the sharik. Now, this is very important. Sharik, Rashi says, and you covered. So sometimes I will say when they were cooking something in an oven and they didn't want the oven to go ahead and be opened, so they would go ahead and put like clay around the opening of the oven to temporarily seal the oven. So if you're going and you're cooking lamb meat, which is tender, right? You're cooking a kid, and you cover and you seal up the entrance so you have the oven. That would be a situation where we would have no concern that you would come to go ahead and manipulate the heat source on Shabbos. The bar chavalo sarik aser. But if you're cooking, ram meat, Rashi says, Barcha's ayel gadol, a large ram, where the meat is a little bit tougher. So because the meat is tougher, therefore, halacha lamaisa, there is no concern that one would come to go ahead and, therefore the draft that would come into the oven would not have a negative impact. Visharik, so what happens if you go ahead and you have the ram meat cooking in the oven, and the oven is sealed, right? It's with clay. So is there a concern that you may come to open the oven? So the Gemara says, the bar chavalo sarik aser. If you're cooking ram meat and the oven is not sealed, then obviously that is going to be aser on Shabbos out of a concern that you may open the oven and manipulate the heat source. So what about the gadya velo sarik or the bar chavalo sarik? What happens if you're cooking the meat of a gedi, but you didn't seal the oven, or the meat of the ram, but you did seal the oven? What happens in those cases? Rav Ashi sharif, Rav Yirmiyahu difti aser. So Rav Ashi says it's permitted, because Rav Ashi says, all you really need is one qualifier in each case to go ahead and remove the concern about stoking the fire. But ultimately, again, Rav Yirmiyahu Midifti says that it is aser. Ul Rav Ashi Dishari, and according to Rav Ashi, who says that it is permitted, Vatanya, we learned, in Tzolin Basar Batzol Beitza, but according to Rav Ashi, said you could do this, but we learned in our Braisa that in general you are not permitted to roast meat or an onion or an egg on Shabbos. The only way you could maintain it on the heat source is halacha lemaisa if it was cooked before Shabbos. Hasam the baruch avalos sarik, the meat that is being referred to in that Braisa ultimately again is ram meat where the oven is not sealed. So if the oven is not sealed, that's where there's a concern that she may come to go ahead and manipulate the heat source. Ikad army, another version of this, Tegadya, Bein Sarik, Bein Lo Sarik, Shapir Dami. Others say that if it's the meat of a kid, then halacha lemaisa, either way, whether the oven is sealed or unsealed, it makes no difference. Since the opening of the oven will be detrimental to the meat, therefore we assume that a person is not going to do it, and therefore it is not problematic. The Barucha Nami, Bisharik, Shapir Dami. Similarly, again, if you have ram's meat in the oven and the oven is sealed, that's also okay. Because even though, again, opening the oven and the draft won't impact the meat, but you have the reminder not to open up the oven as a result of the fact that the oven is sealed. So what's the machlokas? Ki pligi, the baruch avalo sarik. So ultimately, again, the machlokas is what happens if you're cooking ram's meat, but the oven is not sealed. The Rav Ashi shari, because ultimately, again, Rav Ashi says that it is permitted. Rav Ashi says that it is permitted. Rav Yirmiyahu Midifti says that it's aser. Or Rav Ashi, the Shari Kohen, Rav Ashi says that it's permitted. It says the Raisa says that you can't roast meat, an egg, or an onion, unless, of course, they're fully roasted before the day. That's actually referring to meat that is being roasted over open coals. So because it's over open coals, therefore, again, the heat source is there, it's exposed, and if for halacha lemaisa, it would be much easier for a person to come to manipulate that heat source. Amravina, Ravina says, Haikra chaya shapir dami. So we'll say, so apparently again Ravina says, kra is a gourd. Is a gourd. A raw gourd. It's okay to put that on the heat source before Shabbos. Kevan de kashi lezeka kibisra de gadja dami. Because ultimately are permitted to put in the oven. Since if you open up the oven, the draft would be detrimental to the gourd. Therefore, again, halacha lamaisa, it is like going ahead and cooking the meat of a gedi, which we are not concerned that you may come to open the oven to manipulate the heat source, because the opening of the oven would be detrimental to the meat itself. So we'll say, so that brings a close to that particular sugya. So just again with the Gemara, so just this is a good introduction to the Bishul sugya, to the laws of cooking, which we will get into in Mirat Hashem a little bit later on in the Masechta. But just see here that the concern with having, so let's take a step back for just a moment. We paskin like Beis Hillel, namely that there is no din of shvisas kelim on Shabbos. There's no problem for your utensils to quote unquote do melacha on Shabbos. We have this all the time. We set our lights on a timer, right? Our air conditioning goes on. There's other things. So there are things that ultimately, again, our utensils do work on Shabbos. So therefore, that is not a problem. The problem sometimes comes up is if those utensils make noise on Shabbos. Noise could be a problem. Noise could be a problem. But the idea over here, therefore, using that logic, that if I go ahead and I put food up to cook before Shabbos, there should seemingly be no problem with that food cooking into Shabbos. But now we begin to see the only potential problem that does exist is not really an issue with my oven doing work, but it's more an issue of concern that I may come to manipulate the heat source in order to go ahead and accelerate cooking. So what you just saw over here in the Gemara are essentially the Gemara trying to figure out when do we have that concern and when don't we have that concern. So that's the end of this sugya over here, but just bear in mind, this is going to be the sugya we're going to come back to when in Mir Tesh, when we get to the laws of Bishul, the laws of cooking on Shabbos. Good. So the Gemara goes weiter. Tan Rabbanan, sorry, Beis Shammai Omrim Ein Mochrin. So we'll say another thing in the Mishnah that was said, was Beis Shammai said, you can't go ahead and sell merchandise, or for that matter, again, help to a Gentile, or help load up merchandise on the donkey of a Gentile, or help load up merchandise on the Gentile himself, unless, of course, Beis Shammai says that he's going to get to his destination before Shabbos. Beis Shammai's concern is that if people see the Gentile walking around with merchandise that people knew at one point in time did belong to the Jew, the concern is that people will think that the Gentile is transacting business on behalf of the Jew. That's Beis Shammai's concern. Beis Hillel says, we're not concerned. Once you go out and you give it to the Gentile, it's his, and there's nothing more to talk about. So it says the Gemara Tan Rabbanan, Beis Shammai Omrim Lo Yimkor Adam Chafetzo Lenochri. So Beis Shammai says a person should not sell merchandise to a Gentile on Erev Shabbos, V'lo Yashilenu, V'lo Yilavenu, V'lo Yitin Lo B'matana, Ela Kedei Shagi Elaveso. Nor should you lend him something, nor should you gift him something, unless, of course, he has enough time to reach his home before Shabbos. So Beis Shammai essentially says, you can't give or gift or transact any business with a Gentile on Erev Shabbos with merchandise, unless, of course, the Gentile is going to be able to get home before the onset of Shabbos. But if he's not going to get home, the concern is if he's traveling on Shabbos with the merchandise of a Jew, the concern is that people will think that he's transacting business on behalf of the Jew. Beis Hillel says, no, it's enough if he gets to the house right next to the wall of the city. So Beis Hillel seemed to be saying, the Gentile doesn't have to go ahead and get literally to his destination, he just has to get, sounds like, close enough to the city in which he lives. So there apparently were always some people, we'll see this more and more in depth in just a moment, who would live outside of the wall of the city. So as long as he'd get to the domicile outside of the wall of the city, which is his intended destination, that's enough. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kedei Sheyetze Mipesach Beiso. Rabbi Akiva says, no, all we need is for the Gentile to leave the Jew's home before Shabbos begins. As long as the Gentile leaves the home of the Jew before Shabbos begins, we are good. So it says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, Hein Divrei Rabbi Akiva, Hein Divrei Beisilo, Lo Ba Rabbi Akiva El Lefarish Divrei Beisilo. To which Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbi Akiva is not an Ushita. Rabbi Yehuda is actually coming to qualify Beis Hillel's statement that all Beis Hillel need is you could transact business with a Gentile on Shabbos, you could sell a merchandise. The only thing we need is that the Gentile needs to leave the house of the Jew before Shabbos begins. As long as he leaves before Shabbos begins, while he's out of Jewish property, then there's no concern that it's going to look like he's transacting business with a Jew on Shabbos. Beautiful. Says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanon. We'll say, Halacha L'maisa. Beishamei Omrim lo yimkar adam chemtzo l'nachri, ela imkin yodea bo shi'echal l'kodem ha-pasat v'r Beishamei. Listen to this, we'll say. Beishamei says, you can't sell chametz to a Gentile, unless, of course, you're absolutely sure that the Gentile is going to finish up all of that chametz before Pesach. Why? Because what are we concerned about? We're concerned that people are going to know that this is Yiddish chametz, right? This is Jewish chametz. And they're not going to know that the Jew sold it to the Gentile. They think maybe, again, the Gentile's holding it for the Jew. And people are going to see that the Gentile's consuming Jewish-owned chametz on Pesach. Therefore, halacha l'maisa, if you want to go ahead and sell chametz to a Jew, to a Gentile, he must finish it all up before Pesach. Beis Hillel says, it's not a problem. Beis Hillel says, no, as long as you're allowed to eat it, you could sell it. And the idea is, and once you sell it, it's no longer yours. There's nothing more for you to worry about. And I will say, that is, of course, how we paskin. Rabbi Hudon Rehuda says, top of your test, I will say, Kusach habavli v'chol minei kusach asr lim kor lama yom kol lama pesach. So this was very interesting. So Rabbi Huda says, Kusach habavli. You know, kusach is everybody's favorite dip, made out of moldy bread, soured milk. Again, I'm sure it was great. So lemaisa, again, the issue with kusach is it has a very, very, very long shelf. I guess it makes sense. Once the bread is already moldy, once the milk is already sour, like what else is going to happen? So lemaisa, it had a long shelf life. So Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says that halacha lemaisa, you shouldn't sell kusach to a Gentile within 30 days of Pesach. Because apparently people would keep kusach for up to 30 days. So we'll say, so this obviously reflects the view of Beis Shammai. We paskin like Beis Hillel, which is, no, as long as there's no problem with selling chametz to a Jew. As long as I can eat it, I can sell it. Once I can no longer eat it, I can't sell it anymore either. Although again, Hilchos Pesach, that's not totally true either. There is a point in time, we back up the time in which it is usher to eat chametz. So there is time where I still can't eat it, but I could still sell it. Good. Tana Rabbanan. No slim is also thing I kill bechatzer. It's not love yotze in his kakin. I'll say, if I put out food for a dog, so there's a whole discussion over here exactly like whose dog is this, but we're not going to get into this now. I put out, you'll see what the point that the Gemara is making is, I put out chametz for a dog on Shabbos, I don't have to be concerned that the dog is then going to carry that chametz outside and perform an act of chutzah. In other words, once I put it out for the dog, I'm done with it. The chametz is no longer misyaches, it's no longer connected to me, and therefore whatever the dog does with it, the dog does with it. So the Gemara says, Ki yotzebo, nos de mizonos with ne'anachri. So we'll say, I can give mizonos to a non-Jew on Shabbos, b'chatzar, not lo v'yatza, in his kakin lo. So let's say I give chametz to a non-Jew on Shabbos, I need not be concerned that ultimately, again, the non-Jew is going to go ahead and take the chametz outside of my rishus into another rishus. That's of no concern to me. So the Gemara is, once I give away the chametz is not whether I'm giving it to an animal or whether I'm giving it to a nachri. At the end of the day, once I give it to someone or something, then halacha l'maisa, I no longer have any connection to that chametz. So the Gemara says, hasu amli. So we'll say, so again, so isn't the case of the nachri and the keleb the same one? In other words, we'll say, not chasa shalom equating the nachri to the kelev, but you understand what the Gemara is saying is that conceptually it's the same thing. I'm giving chametz to a quote unquote third party. What does it matter if that third party is a kelev or the third party is a nachri? At the end of the day, what the Gemara is saying is once you go in and you give your chametz to someone or something, then no matter what that someone or something does with the chametz, it doesn't impact you. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you the difference. Mao detema ha rami alei v'hai lo rami alei. So this is very interesting. There might be an obligation ultimately again for me to go ahead and give food to the dog. Why? Why? Because lemaisa again, there's a din of tsar bali chayim, or it could be that it's my dog. I have an obligation to feed my animals, but lemaisa, quote unquote, there's no obligation for me to give food to the nachri, right? There's no obligation. So I might have thought maybe the only time that I don't have to worry about what happens to the food, I don't have to worry about what's happening to the food, is when. How was I? Tell you, it's mamish like tests my ability to concentrate. I see David Flum sitting there with a black hat. Menachem looks like he's taking a tour through a haunted house. Mamish, it's all right, incredible, good. It tests my. I feel like this is like extreme dafyomi. You know, I have to under all conditions. This is, says the Gemara as follows. So therefore, again, halacha lemaisa. What I begin to learn is that at the end of the day, I have an obligation to go, let's see, because I would have thought, in the case of the Nachri, I have no obligation to give him mazonos. Maybe because I have no obligation, therefore that chametz is still tethered to me in some way. And therefore, if the Nachri subsequently takes it out, maybe again, I have some chiyuv. Okay, good. Says the Gemara, kamash malon. So kamash malon, that at the end of the day, once essentially you put down chametz for someone else to take, whether it's the kelev or whether it's the nachri, that chametz is no longer mine, and therefore whatever happens to it, happens to it. Tan Rabbanan, lo yaski adam kelev v'nachri b'erev Shabbos. So it's a very interesting sugis now. So a person should not go ahead and rent out his utensils to a nachri on Erev Shabbos. So we'll say, remember, this is all. So we're continuing over here. Look at Rashi. Lo yaskir adam kelev, lasos pen malacha b'Erev Shabbos, dinir shemaskir lo tzorach Shabbos. So we'll say, listen to this. On a technical level, if my Gentile neighbor comes and asks to borrow my tools, or my lawnmower, or whatever else, and he's asking to go ahead and borrow it Erev Shabbos, on a technical level, there should be no reason, there's no problem with that. The concern that we run into is if people see the Gentile working with my kelim on Shabbos, there's a concern that people will think that I contracted him to work on Shabbos. If they see him using my utensils, so remember, I want to be clear, Maker Adin, if the Nachri borrows my utensils and does his own work with them on Shabbos, that's not a problem. Why is that not a problem? Remember, because we paskin like Beis Hillel, which is there's no din of Shvisas Kelim on Shabbos. My utensils don't have to, quote unquote, be at rest on Shabbos. There's no obligations. Therefore, if I want to lend out my toolbox or my lawnmower to the Nachri Erev Shabbos, that's not a problem. The concern that's coming up over here is a concern ultimately that people will think that he's doing work on my behalf. So if they see the Nachri riding around on my lawnmower on Shabbos, they may think that halacha lemaisa, he's working for me on Shabbos. That's the concern. So therefore the Braisa says over here, you can't lend your utensils to a Nachri on Erev Shabbos. But if it's Wednesday or Thursday, it's not a problem. Similarly, in Mishalchen Igros Biad Nachri Be'erev Shabbos. Similarly, you can't send letters. You can't send letters with a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos. So I'm about to say, out of concern, again, that it is going to appear that he's doing malach on my behalf on Shabbos. However, b'dalat v'hei mutter, but halacha ma'aseh on Wednesday, Thursday, it's totally fine. Amra lav Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. They said Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. Va'amri le'a Rabbi Yossi HaChassid. Shelo nimtza ksav yado b'yad nachri me'olam. That ultimately, again, they say about these great rabban, Rabbi Yossi HaKohen or Rabbi Yossi HaChassid, they never sent letters with Gentile letter carriers. They're always concerned that if their mail, if their letter, was found in the hands of a nachri on Shabbos, people might think that the Nachri is working on behalf of Rabbi Yossi HaChassid or Rabbi Yossi HaKohen on Shabbos. Therefore, they were very careful never to deposit their letter with Gentile letter carriers. Very interesting. Tan Rabbanon, in Mishalchin Igras Igeres Biad Nachri Erev Shabbos, you cannot go ahead and send a letter with a Nachri on Erev Shabbos, Ela Imkim Kotzeitz Lo Damim, unless, of course, you set a particular wage. Now, I will say this line over here is exceptionally important when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos. Take a look at Rashi. Ela imkin kotzeis lo damim, Rashi says, the kevan de kotzeis lo damim bididei tarach. Supposed to listen to this. The assumption is that if you set a wage with a nachri, with a gentile for a particular service, then when the nachri does that service, he's no longer really quote-unquote working for you, but rather he's working for himself. So in other words, if I engage a nachri to do something, and I tell him, I'm paying you $500 for this task, $500 for this task, and I'm not necessarily even telling you exactly when it is that it has to be done, but I'm giving you $500 for the task, once I engage him in that way, the assumption now is that the nachri is working, quote-unquote, for himself, or for his own interests. Look at Rashi again. Kevan dekatzis lo damim, since you established a price for the service, bididei tarach. The nachri is considered to be working for himself. Rashi just points out over here that this only works according to Beis Hillel, not according to Rashi. So we'll say, again, it's beyond the scope of our shiur this morning to get into this, but this is this concept that sometimes when you engage the nachri, not on an hourly level, or for that matter, again, not even necessarily on a strict timeline, but you engage him ultimately to do a task, and that task then has a dollar amount associated with it. Interestingly enough, in the eyes of halacha, it's almost as if the nachri becomes like an independent contractor at that point. The moment that that price is set, he's working for himself. He's working for himself, and whatever he does or doesn't do, we'll say, so this comes up all the time in Hilchos Shabbos. All the time in Hilchos Shabbos, where halacha lamaisa, I engage a nachri to do something. And again, I can't explicitly instruct a Gentile to work for me on Shabbos. That I cannot do. But let's say I engage him to do a task. And as a task, this happens all the time, it's a task that's going to take a couple of days. And he chooses to work on Shabbos, that's absolutely fine. There are many caveats to that. This doesn't apply necessarily to things that are being done in your house, which are more public sphere. But again, there's a variety of different examples of this. But it's all based on this idea of katzatz lo damim. Once the service has a defined price tag to it, and again, there's not an explicit timeline that demands the nachri's work on Shabbos, then halach lamaisa, he's ultimately, again, he's working for himself. So the Gemara says, Beishamai says that it only works, you can only send a letter with him if he's able to get to his intended destination before Shabbos. Or really what it means is, Beishamai says you can only send a letter with the Nachri if the Nachri has the ability to get to the home of the intended recipient before Shabbos. Beis Hillel says, no, it's okay. Even if he could just get to the home outside of the wall of the city of his intended destination. One second, you just said before that according to Beis Hillel, once you set a price with the Nachri can do whatever he wants, right? Then there's no worries anymore about what the Nachri is going to do or not going to do. So the Gemara says, this is what it means to say. The Imlo Katzatz. So we'll say, so if you went ahead and you established a price with the Nachri, then pretty much the Nachri could kind of do whatever he wants. He wants to take the letter, you know, Erev Shabbos, 2 minutes before Shabbos. As long as you're not giving it to him on Shabbos, it's not a problem. What happens if you did not establish a rate with the Nachri? You're going to pay him, but there's no established price. Shabbos say, in that case, Beishamai says you can only send a letter if halacha lamaisa is going to reach its intended destination before Shabbos. And Beis Hillel says, he doesn't have to get to the intended destination, but he has to get ultimately again to the home outside of the wall of the intended destination, which means you have to get close, but you don't have to get all of the way there. But 1 second, Beis Shammai, you just said before that halacha lamaisa, you can't send the letter at all on Erev Shabbos. And furthermore, even according to Beis Hillel, it sounds like lamaisa, you can't go ahead and send it unless of course, katzatz, you established a wage, to which he was lokasha, hadekviya beidar b'masa, hadol kviya beidar d'masa. So I'll say, interestingly enough, I will say it's interesting, beidar in this context is not a post office, right? Which is the modern Hebrew usage of it. Interestingly enough, dar over here means something different. Rashi says dar, shilton ha'ir velo regilin l'shloach egros. we'll say Dolar was like the mayor of the city. So interestingly enough, the mayor of the city often used to go ahead and reside either right by the wall of the city, inside the city, outside the city. But the idea is that when the mayor was there, the mayor was someone who would often receive mail. So halacha lemaisa, what the Gemara is suggesting is as follows, that at the end of the day, if the mayor lives in town and he normally goes ahead and receives mail, so therefore you could send it even on Erev Shabbos, even lo katzatz, because at the end of the day, there'll be some place to deposit the mail. But if the mayor doesn't live there, that's when the Braisa said before that halacha lemaisa, you can't send the mail. So we'll say, remember, for our purposes, halacha lemaisa, the way, just to kind of give a broad halacha lemaisa application of this, so we permit a Jew to engage a Gentile to do malacha before Shabbos, even right before Shabbos. The stipulation is that you can't demand of the Nachri to do the malacha on Shabbos. So if I'm dropping off my car by the mechanic, so I can't go ahead and drop off the car by the mechanic and say 10 minutes before Shabbos, say I'll pick this up, Matzei Shabbos. That you cannot do. I could drop it off 10 minutes before Shabbos and say, you know what, I'll get it on Monday, I'll get it on Tuesday, I'll get it on Wednesday. So if the mechanic wants to work on it on Shabbos, That's his business. It's not my place to tell him when he shouldn't work, when he shouldn't work. I just can't create a situation where the Nachri must do malacha for me on Shabbos. That is the part that you cannot do. So we pass him like Beis Hillel, that you could begin a process with the Nachri Erev Shabbos, and even if it technically continues on to Shabbos, that to a certain degree is irrelevant and totally fine, as long as I don't stipulate that it has to be done on Shabbos. Tana Rabbana, we'll say another fascinating sugya. Ein mafligin b'sfina pachos in yom kol b'shabbos. We'll say you can't get on a boat less than 3 days before Shabbos. Can't get on a boat less than 3 days before Shabbos. So we'll say, it's interesting, lean up to Shulchan Aruch and Reish Mem Ches. I'm sorry. I'm coming back. So the Shulchan Aruch and Reish Mem Ches actually has a fascinating introduction to this. So we don't have time to get into it now, but I'll send out the Mara Mokum today. So the introduction, so Simon Reish Mem Ches and Arachayim, the title of the Simon is Traveling by Boat on Shabbos. Traveling by boat on Shabbos. And the Shulchan Aruch begins with this idea that ideally you should not set out on boat travel 3 days before Shabbos. Now, in the Hakdama, in the introduction to this sif, the Mishnah Berurah goes through a variety of different reasons. What's wrong with getting on a boat 3 days before Shabbos? Shabbos, I said, there's a concern that maybe, again, I may have to do malacha. Boat travel was considered to be sakanas nefashos. Am I putting myself in a makom sakana where I'm going to have to do malacha on Shabbos? Remember, again, in a situation where there's a threat to life, you're allowed to do malacha on Shabbos. But should I proactively put myself in such a scenario like that? Getting on a boat potentially puts myself b'makom sakana, which will require me to do malacha on Shabbos. So although, if I'm in sakanas nefashos, I can do malacha on Shabbos, but should I put myself in that situation? Other opinion says that halacha lemaisa, in general, boat travel required malacha, whether it was tying knots or other things like that. So don't put yourself. And I will say, then you have the other opinions who say it's a din in seasickness. So apparently, again, for the first 3-4 days of boat travel, that's when people would, I guess, normally get seasickness. Chazal did not want us to be seasick on Shabbos Kodesh. Okay, so the idea is, therefore, we don't go and set out on boat travel within 3 days before Shabbos. Remember, when is that so? L'dva harashos. But I'll say, that's only if you're going ahead and going for some type of optional purpose. Aval advar mitzvah shapridami. But I will say, halacha lemaisa, if you're traveling by boat for some type of mitzvah mission, you have to get somewhere for mitzvah purposes, then you are permitted to get on a boat, even Erev Shabbos, as we're going to see. Uposek imo amanas lishbos ve'eino shoves tirei Rebbe. So this is very interesting. Rebbe says, but ideally what you should do is when you get on the boat, you should stipulate with the captain that halacha lemaisa, I don't want to travel on Shabbos. And even though you know the captain is going to ignore you, it's okay. Meaning at the end of the day, what the Jew has to make the declaration is, from my perspective, I have no interest in traveling on Shabbos. I don't want the boat to travel on Shabbos. I'm happy to dock for Shabbos. If the captain says, okay, noted, but I don't care what you have to say with traveling on Shabbos, it's still fine for you to get on. You just have to make that declaration. Reb Shimon Omer Eino Tzar. Reb Shimon says, no, there's no need to go ahead and make that declaration. So the Gemara says, Umisar Letzidon. And to travel from Tzur to Tzidon, afilu berav Shabbos motor. So we'll see here what the Gemara is saying is to take a short journey, let's say from Tzur to Tzidon, which was less than a day's journey, that journey you could go ahead and do even on Erev Shabbos. So we'll say, so this discussion is actually quite fascinating in general about boat travel on Shabbos. In general, is quite fascinating in terms of the halachos, in terms of the limitations. But again, that you see in the purest form of the halacha. Halacha telling you ideally not to disembark within 3 days before Shabbos. Tan Rabbanon, ain't sudden ala yaros shal nachrim pachon zekim lo yom kodem Shabbos. Similarly, if the Jewish army is going out to war, we don't lay siege to a city within 3 days of Shabbos. I will say the idea being that if battle doesn't have to occur on Shabbos, we'd rather battle not occur on Shabbos. So don't start laying siege to a city within 3 days of Shabbos. They mischilu, but if for some reason they did begin a siege within 3 days of Shabbos, ain't mafsikin. At the end of the day, you don't stop. You don't stop. V'chin hayeshame omer ad ridita afilu b'shabbos. The pasuk says that if you go to war, right? If you go to war, right? Hu osim cham lochama ad ridita. You must fight until you vanquish your enemies. So what's an incredible yisod, first of all, in the ethics of Jewish warfare, fight to win. Fight to win. That's how. At least ideally, the Gemara says the Jewish army should fight. But Lamaisa, what it also tells is an incredible Moser, which is that once you start something, do not stop until you finish it. So again, once you start the siege, finish it up. And the truth is, it's not just siege; it's any initiative in life. Once you start something in life, finish it. Because if you don't finish it immediately, then chances are it will not get done. Tanya. So Rabbi Tzadok says, this was the minog. I'm sorry, I skipped it to that. No, again, I'm supposed to remember again, the Mishnah said, Rabbi Gamliel said, that in my father's home, halacha lamaisa, what was the lashon of the Mishnah? They would only go ahead, they would only give kli lavan, they would only give white utensils to the launderer 3 days before Shabbos. Whereas they wouldn't give the white utensils to the launderer within 3 days of Shabbos. Only 3 days before Shabbos. So the Gemara says, we'll see, Tanya. This was the custom of Rabbi Gamliel's home. They would give white garments to be laundered 3 days before Shabbos. White garments are harder to launder than colored garments. So they would give the white garments to the Gentile launderer 3 days before Shabbos. This way, giving him sufficient time that the garment could be laundered before Shabbos. Utsvu and afilu be'erev Shabbos. But colored clothing, they would give to the launderer even erev Shabbos. Apparently, to clean a colored garment takes much less time. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, even erev Shabbos. Umidivreim lamadnu, and from their words we learn, shalavanim kashan lechabsan yosem inat zvuin. Ultimately, from their words we learn what Rabbi say, that it is harder to launder white clothing than it is to go ahead and launder colored clothing. And Rabbi Yossi, you'll say to yourself, okay, that is a fantastic and important conclusion. So Rashi points out over here that actually is a very important conclusion for schar kobes, how much money you pay a launderer. So apparently, again, the amount of money you pay to launder a white garment is going to go ahead and be more money than you pay to launder a colored garment, because there is more effort in laundering the white garment than it is ultimately, again, in laundering the colored garment. So we'll say, the Gemara says as follows, Abai havi yoyev le mana ditziva lakatsura. Abai was one time giving a colored garment to the launderer to be laundered. Amarle kama baisili. Abai said to the guy, to the launderer, how much? Amarle kidichivra. The guy said, don't worry about it. I charge the same price for colored garments as I do for white garments. Amarle kevar kidmuch rabana. So Abai said to the launderer, the rabbis were on the lookout for guys like you. Right? So the rabbi says, this is why Chazal said that it is harder to launder a colored garment than it is to launder a, excuse me, harder to launder a white garment than a colored garment. So therefore, again, the colored garment should be less money. You're overcharging me for laundering a colored garment. Amar Abaye, Hayman Diyal Manalakatsav Mishcha, Nesivle, B'mishcha Nishkomine. So when you give a garment to the launderer to launder, when you give it to him to launder, you should measure it. And when you get it back, you should measure it. Why is this? The Tafi Afside, Dimachte, because if you get the garment back and it's larger than when you gave it to the launderer, that means that it has been stretched. V'ibatsir, and if the garment has shrunk, or I should say, if the garment is smaller, the kafze. Ultimately, again, it has shrunk. So therefore, the Gemara telling us that Allah l'maisi, you give clothing to the launderer, ultimately, again, know the size of the garment you are giving. Good. V'shavin elu ve'elu shetonim. So then the Mishnah goes on. And the Mishnah explains very beautifully that halacha l'maisa, both v'shavin v'esel agree that you could put the olives and the grapes underneath the press on Erev Shabbos, even though, again, they're going to press down on Shabbos itself. So we'll say, this is very important, because even Beis Shammai, who said that there's a din of Shvisas Kelim, therefore you cannot begin any process on Erev Shabbos that will not be complete before the start of Shabbos, agrees that you could put grapes and olives into the press on Erev Shabbos, even though they're going to continue to get pressed on Shabbos itself. To which the Gemara asks this question, Maishna kulu tugazru behu Beis Shammai, or Maishna korus beis abad v'igule hagat delo gazru. So why is it that Beis Shammai says, by all the other cases, you can't have malacha continue into Shabbos, your kelim can't do malacha, yet by the press, they allow it ultimately again to continue into Shabbos? To which the Gemara says, very simple, Hanach di avu bu Shabbos mechayiv chatos gazru Beis Shammai, Erev Shechas, Erev Shabbos in chashecha, Koros Beisabad the Guli Hagat the Avidlu Bishabis Lomachaiv Chatos Lo Gazru. So very simple, I will say. By everything else in the Mishnah that Beis Shammai was gozer on, if you were to do any of these items lechatchila on Shabbos, you would be chayiv chatos. There's a Isser Daoraisa. Apparently, leaving stuff in the press on Shabbos does not create an Isser Daoraisa. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says over here, well, actually, not yet. So we'll say, so therefore, the Gemara is making the following distinction. Beis Shammai is only gozer on things that you can't do on Erev Shabbos. If you were to do them on Shabbos, it would create a biblical obligation, a chiyuv chatos. But anything that if you were to do it on Shabbos itself would not create the chiyuv chatos, Beis Shammai is not gozer. So the Gemara says, let's analyze this. Man tana, now we'll say, now why is that? The assumption is because when you put stuff in a press, everything else kind of just happens on its own afterwards. There's no active malacha being done. That's why Beis Shammai seems to indicate to us that halacha l'maaseh would be okay. So man tana d'chol midi d'asim emela shaper dami. Who is the opinion who holds that halacha l'maaseh, anything that kind of happens on its own, anything you were to do, and the rest of the process happens on its own on Shabbos, would not be a chiyuv chatos? Amr Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina, Rabbi Shmuel. It's Rabbi Shmuel. Disnan Hashum v'Habos Rav Amalilo Sharaskim Beod Yom. If you have garlic or unripened grapes or malilos are pieces of wheat, shibolin, stalks of wheat that are not fully mature. So we'll say, so what happens? And you put these items underneath a stone. Sharaskan liba od yom. So you go ahead and you mash them up before Shabbos. Rabbi Shmuel Omer Yigmar Mishatech Shach. Rabbi Shmuel says that halacha l'maisa, once you've mashed them before Shabbos, you could put them underneath the stone, even on Shabbos itself. And halacha l'maisa, you could go and put them on the stone before Shabbos, and halacha l'maisa, whatever happens afterwards is okay. So we'll see Rabbi Shmuel's of this opinion that halacha l'maisa, once you've begun the process of essentially mashing or grinding up the items, putting it underneath a heavy beam to extract the rest of it is not really an Isser D'oraisa. Rabbi Akiva Omer Amud Beis. Rabbi Akiva says, Lo Yigmar. Rabbi Akiva says, no, halacha l'maisa, you can't put them underneath the press before Shabbos. So let's say, to just be very clear, Rabbi Shmuel's case over here is where you took these items, you began to already crush them before Shabbos. So Rabbi Shmuel says, under those circumstances, you could put it underneath the beam, underneath the press before Shabbos, and let the rest of the process unfold on Shabbos. Not a problem. Rabbi Akiva says, you cannot do that. Rabbi Akiva says, halacha l'maisa, you can't do that. You can't put them underneath the press even before Shabbos, because then the malacha continues into Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar, Amar, Rabbi Eliezer, he. So Rabbi Elazar says this, Rabbi Elazar says, it reflects the Rabbi Eliezer. What does Rabbi Eliezer say? This nan, chalos tabasha, risk of marriage Shabbos. Well, if you ever take a honeycomb, if you take a honeycomb and you break apart the comb before Shabbos, now what happens? That means the honey will flow out itself on Shabbos itself. So we'll say, so what's the status ultimately again of the honey that comes out? So the Gemara says, V'yotzomi atzman aser. So we'll say, first opinion says that halacha l'maisa, it is aser. You can't eat that honey on Shabbos. Rabbi Elazar Matir, Rabbi Elazar says that it is permitted. So we'll say so again. So again, Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that stuff that kind of just flows out on its own on Shabbos is going to be permitted. This would be reflective of the view of Beis Shammai in the Mishnah, that Allah says, as long as you put the items underneath the press before Shabbos, anything that flows out of it on Shabbos is not a problem. Rabbi Yosef Chanina, my Tamil Amar Rabbi Elazar. Why does Rabbi Chanina not say like Rabbi Elazar? Amar lecha hasam, he would say the following. In the case of the honeycomb, hasam hu deme'ikara ochel basof ochel. So we'll say the honeycomb, it was honey while it was in the comb, and it's honey when it's outside of the comb. So the object itself has not really changed in any dramatic way. You've just simply moved it from one location to the next. Hacha ne'ikara ochel. Vahashtamashke. But I will say, instead, by the case of the liquid inside of the grapes or inside of the olives, in the beginning when it's a grape and an olive, it's ochel, and then afterwards it's mashke. You're changing the state. So maybe the only time that you're permitted to go ahead and partake of something that comes out on its own is when the item itself doesn't change state. It was honey in the combs and it's honey outside of the combs. But if you're taking something that was a food, for example, olives and grapes, and now what's coming out of it is a liquid, who says that you can enjoy that on Shabbos? To which the Gemara says, Amar lecha, Hashem. So the Gemara says as follows. Hakam ikara ochel vashtamashka. Rabbi Elazar, Amar lecha. Rabbi Elazar will say to you, Hashem inale l'Rabbi Elazar, dafilu zesim va'anavim nami deshari. And I will say the chiddush over here is that according to Rabbi Elazar, this is even permitted in a case of zesim va'anavim. Now I will say we're going to see when we get to the halachos of schita, the halachos of squeezing out liquid. You're not allowed to squeeze out liquid from a fruit on Shabbos. Right? That we know. That's part of the malacha of mefarik, the malacha of dash, of threshing. We're going to see, however, that not all fruits are created the same. Zesim va'anavim. So for example, olives and grapes will have a chi of the araisa. So again, we'll get into all of this. So the Gemara says, you see from here, that halacha l'maisa, even to put grapes and olives underneath the press on Erev Shabbos is going to be okay. Daha, kiyas raboshia minarda, asa va'aisi mas nise biadeh. Because when Roshia came from Narda, he brought the Mishnah in his hand, and what did he say? Zeisim va'andavim shariska me'erev Shabbos, v'yatzo me'atzman asurin. If you have grapes and olives that you mashed up on Erev Shabbos, this is before you put it in the under the press. You just mashed them on Erev Shabbos, and now what happens? The juice oozes out on Shabbos itself, so the juice is aser. The juice is aser. Rabbi Elazar of Rabbi Shimon matirin. Rabbi Elazar of Rabbi Shimon ultimately say that it's mutter. Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina. And Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon say that it's mutter. Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina brisa lo shmiyale. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, he never heard this brisa before. Rabbi Elazar my tamalamak Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina. Why does Rabbi Elazar not hold of Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina? To which the Gemara says Amar lecha lab itmar ala, because it was said regarding this idea. Amar Rava Bar Chanina, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, b'mechusar and dika to kol the amal opligi. He will say if the items in question are mechusar dika. Now mechusar dika means they have not yet been pounded. In the process of going ahead and extracting liquid from fruit, there are essentially three different stages, three different parts. So when ultimately, again, the fruits have not yet been pounded, to kol the amal opligi, everyone will agree that halacha l'maisa, it is usher to go ahead and put it under the press, because putting it under the press is the final stage. Keep ligi. So ultimately, again, where does the machlokes come up? The mechusar and shrika. Maisha, you'll do me a favor and get ready to daven, so we still have a chance to make a to make vasikin this morning. So ki pligi b'mechusar and shchika. So we'll say, so ultimately again, when is it that halacha lamaisa? When is it that halacha lamaisa? There's a it's okay when they're missing mashing. So we'll say again, Rashi says shchika yoser midiga. So if the fruits have essentially already been prepared to a heightened level, to a heightened point, where halacha lamaisa again, all that's left is this last part. They've already been prepared, and all that's missing is this last piece, then ultimately, again, it will be okay. Actually, that's the machlokas. Keep ligim muchsar and shchika. The haninami, these particular fruit in question, ki muchsar and dika, are as if they are just missing this last stage of pounding. So the Gemara says, hor Rabbi Yossi v'chanina k'rabishmo. Ultimately, Rabbi Yossi v'chanina paskind like Rabbi Yishmo. Good. So that pretty much brings to an end this sugya. So bottom line, Abose, what comes out is as follows, is that halacha lemaisa, Beis Shammai essentially says that although we normally say your kelim cannot do work for you on Shabbos, halacha lemaisa, this case of placing the olives or placing the grapes underneath the press is going to be okay. For the simple reason that halacha, there are a couple of different interpretations as to why this should be permitted. But bottom line is that according to Beis Shammai, essentially what's occurring is an element of passivity. That's what's happening over here. The grapes and the olives are not doing anything. The press is not really doing anything. It's just the force of gravity that's occurring over here. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that Beis Shammai only prohibits something that if you were to do it on Shabbos itself, would be a chi of Dorais. Although that particular argument does not really seem to hold water, because at the end of the day, Beis Shammai even prohibits things like instructing a non-Jew to do things, which even if you were to do that on Shabbos, would not be an Isra Doraisa. So I'll say, but again, just we're going to stop over here for today, but bottom line for our purposes is that halacha lamaisa, again, we paskin like Beis Hillel. So remember, again, we paskin that you could put into play pretty much any malacha process on Shabbos with a couple of, with just two important caveats. Caveat number one is that when it comes to cooking, even if you started it before Shabbos, has the additional concern of Shem Yechata. The additional concern ultimately, again, of that you may come to go ahead and adjust the flame. So we'll deal with that by cooking. The other possibility is you could put, according to Beis Hillel, processes into motion Erev Shabbos, but if those processes make noise, you cannot have them go on Shabbos. That was the case of the water mill. And then the third caveat, according to Beis Hillel, might be that even according to Beis Hillel, you do have to be careful with what you instruct a non-Jew to do on Erev Shabbos. Because if it has the appearance that the non-Jew is transacting business on your behalf on Shabbos Kodesh, ultimately, again, that can be problematic as well. All right, Rabosai, we'll stop over here. We'll pick up with the Shemin Shel Bedadin Emir Tzashem tomorrow. Shkoyach to everyone. We'll begin Shacharis as soon as Maish is ready. And hopefully this morning we will still make Vasikin. Tomorrow morning, just a reminder, it's Rosh Chodesh. Semir Tashem will begin at Daf Yomi at 5:45.